friends. This year should be a schus, the refuas, Tzvi ben Yittel, and Moshe ben Malka, and Avram Yosef ben Chana, B'sach Shechalei Yisrael, and of course the schus Avim Arvim Rasi Sheyichyu, the schus Moshe Yudah ben Peshadina, also Shein Dulchana Bas Malka, Bracha Batzlach B'chol Matzei Yedeihem. And this is based on the Torah of Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha. We're going to be discussing the Inyan of Purim. If one wants to define the metaphysics of Purim, he will find a seeming contradiction. On one hand, it's a Simcha Dikadei. On the other hand, if you say the metaphysics of Purim, so metaphysics isn't so simchadik, it isn't so Purimdik. So this dichotomy expresses itself not only philosophically, but even halachically. Says the Gemara, Amar Yeshua ben Levi, Chayav Adam Likros, Es HaMegillah B'Layla L'Shnosa B'Yom, Shenemar Elokai Yekrei Yomam V'Lo Sana V'Layla V'Lo Dumi Ali. Amr bichelber amula bira chayv adam likros samigila v'layl shnosa biyom. Shenemar lemayin zemercha chavod v'lo yidam Hashem elokai le'olam adak. Rabbi Shimon Levi said, one is chayv to read the Megillah at night and repeat it the second time by day. As it says, my God, I have called out to you by day. You haven't answered. And at night, there is no silence for me. And then Reb Chelber says the name of Ula bira. One isn't obligated to read the Megillah both. One is obligated to read the Megillah both by day and by night. As the Pasuk says, L'mayin z'mercha chavot v'lo yidom, Hashem elokai le'olam odeka. So b'pashtus, there are two contradictory psukim that are cited by Rabbi Shimon Levi and Ula as the basis for the same halacha that Megillah must be recited both by day and at night. Rabbi Shimon Levi quotes the Pasuk from the 22nd parak of Tehillim, which concludes with Keli Keli Lama Zavtani, Hashem, why have you forsaken me? This appears to be the words of an individual in distress who was forsaken and abandoned. This parak reflects a cry of total despair, the shriek of a frightened and lonely child who suddenly discovered that his mother is gone, he's alone. Eli Eli Lama Zavtani. According to Chazal, this parak was said by Esther on her way to the inner courtyard of Ahasuerus Beyom HaShlishi. It's the Tehillim of a person who lost all hope and out of the depth and profundity of despair, of misery, of agony, a person is supplicating Hashem. So from this parak, Rabbi Shimon Levi learns that you have to read the Megillah both day and night. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Megillah is a din in distress, in mitzuka. Rabbi Chelb, in the name of Huna, learns differently from the 30th parak of Tehillim. Mizmor Shir Chanukah Sabayis L'David, it's a Simcha Dika parak, Be'ervelim Bechi V'Labokarina. He lies down at night with tears, he wakes up with a song. The sick person in this parak, who was miraculously saved from death, he's overwhelmed with gratitude. He doesn't just thank Hashem, he sings Hallel, a type of praise to Hashem, both by day and night. So Ula learns from this pasuk that you read the Megillah both in the evening and the morning. In other words, Ula identifies the reading of the Megillah with the offering of praise, Shevach to the Rabbanu Shalom. The Megillah is a song of Hodah. Rav Nachman says, Kriyas Zu Alila, the reading of the Megillah is praise, it's Hallel. That's like Ula. So what is the Megillah? Is it a book of misery? Of supplication, of crying? Or is it glory, gladness, Hallel, thanking Hashem? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi holds it's a book of sorrow, of distress. It's the cry of the lonely person to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Ula holds that the reading of the Megillah is a song, it's praise, a person was redeemed, was cured by Hashem. So which one's the correct opinion? So of course they're both correct. The Megillah has two stories, not just one. It's the story of human happiness, of fulfillment, and it's the story of human misery, of distress, of loneliness, of hopelessness. It's dialectical. We daven to Hashem when we read the Megillah because we're in distress. We also thank Hashem by relating His wonders. We found refuge in Him. He has just saved us. So this is a new havan on what Purim is. It's not just a day of having a good time, of drinking, of partying. It's also a day of introspection, of self-examination. The Mekubalim speak of the five letters of Purim, Yom Kippurim. It's like Purim. Wow. Tainus Esther. Also, the day that precedes Purim is a day of fasting. It's a Tainus. There's a Vino Malkeinu. There's Slichas. So this is part of Purim, Tainus Esther. Elokai Ekram Chayoma Belosana Velaila Velodumili. I call out to you by day and you haven't answered. And at night and you're not silent to me. The Rambam also apparently holds that there's an inyan of tefillah. Tachanunim on Tainus Esther. Rambam in Perkei Mehilchos Taanios Halacha He. So how can Purim be both? Or to reformulate the question, on what metaphysical facet is the dialectic of Purim based? The answer is found in human condition. Man is a frightened being. He's frightened, not so much psychologically necessarily, even though that's very common today, but existentially, ontologically. Man is anxious because of his greatness, not because of his smallness. Man is frightened because he's superior. He possesses everything which has been denied to other creatures. But those unique faculties are the very source of his fears and troubles. Man is great and singular because he can live in three realities at the same time. He can live in the reality of memory, accompanied by the melancholy awareness of scenes and peoples long since gone. He can also live and does live in the reality which he apprehends with his five senses, which is called the present. He can also live in a third reality, anticipation, where existence is equated with expectancy and tension. Man's confronted by the unknown. What's unknown is frightening. Man wonders what the future holds in store for him. But he can't answer this persistent question. A beast is mortal just as man is. But the animal doesn't think about death. Man does. So man is an anticipatory being and therefore a frightened one, and often unhappy. Man is vulnerable. He's exposed to the outside world, what the Rambam calls keri, this absurd accident. He's exposed to an indifferent destiny. He's aware of his vulnerability and constant exposure. This vulnerability is mentioned in two Svarim, in Koheles and Tehillim. Sefer Koheles writes, Ki gam lo yada adam es itoi kidogim shenechazim bimitsuda ro. Man doesn't know his time, just as the fish that are suddenly seized in a net, snared in an evil time, like birds which are trapped in a snare. So too are the sons of man in an evil time, when it falls suddenly upon them. The emphasis is on the word pisom, suddenly. When fate strikes, it strikes suddenly, unexpectedly. Sickness doesn't always announce its coming. It's out of the blue very often. Nor do violent economic or fanatical political changes warn people in advance, nor for that matter did the contemporary pandemic that we're experiencing right now as I speak. There's a halacha conclusion to be derived from the vulnerability of man, from the sudden change which occurs in his life, the sudden blow, the unexpected surprise attack. Without vulnerability, tefillah would be an impossibility. The mechayiv is tzara, or tzarech, that's what obligates man to daven. The mystics place the emphasis of tefillah on praise, thanksgiving, singing. But Yahadus placed its accent upon tachanunim, supplications, petitions. That prayer is a result of need. If there be no need, man would be happy and satisfied that all his needs have been gratified. There'd be no need for prayer. But because man is vulnerable, he finds himself in constant need. So we have to daven three times a day. For example, if somebody's healthy, Baruch Hashem, he's just been discharged from the hospital, clean bill of health, and yet in the next tefillah he says, Refeinu Hashem v'nei rafe. What does he have to ask Hashem for? Because he doesn't know what's going to be in 3 minutes. People get cancer all the time, it goes away and then it comes back. They beat it once, sometimes they beat it twice, but very often cancer is the winner. Rachmana litzlan. Yimach shemo. So we have to constantly daven, you never know what's going to be. In other words, if we take into consideration human vulnerability, we inexorably arrive at one conclusion, that there's no complete redemption. Of course, be'ervilin bechi v'labokarina, at night you're in distress, in the morning you woke up, you found yourself free, you're breathing the clean, fresh air of Hashem's chesed, the miracle happened, but you don't know now what your fate's going to be the next morning. The vulnerability of man is the great tragic experience of man, and therefore there's no complete holiday. Thus the halachic division of tefillah into two parts, shevech v'hodah on one hand, and tachanunim, petition, on the other. This division isn't absolute. There's no such thing as an absolute hallel. And there's no such thing as pure supplication without thanksgiving. When the halacha talks about hallel, it does so in a qualified manner. There's no thanksgiving without petition. Because no matter how great the miracle was, no promise was given that the catastrophic events, the disastrous occurrences, won't reoccur. Every song of glory has to end in supplication. The song of joy coming from the liberated happy man is ipso facto a cry from the frightened man. In fact, Halal HaMitzri, the Halal par excellence, consists of two parts. There's Shevach V'Hidah and there's Tachanunim. Halalu Avdei Hashem B'Tzeis Yisrael Me'Mitzrayim is Shevach V'Hidah. Ana Hashem Hoshiyana Lo Lanu is Tefillah V'Sachanunim. A minute ago, the person was singing B'Tzeis Yisrael Me'Mitzrayim Beis Yaakov Me'am Lois. Hashem helped us out of Egypt. It was awesome. And then he's crying, Ana Hashem Hoshiyana. It's unbelievable. You see this incredible dialectic. It's both. It's the same thing, same time, same tefillah. Crying out to Hashem, thanking Hashem. No wonder then that Purim is a day both of joyous celebration and a day of prayer and meditation. Kriyas HaMegillah is equated with both Hallel, the recital of praise, and Tachanun, the offering of prayers. Of course, the miracle was great, staggering, defying human imagination. The person who was supposed to be executed on the gallows was suddenly promoted to the office of the Prime Minister, and the people who were doomed to total annihilation suddenly emerged victorious. It was a great miracle. The event deserves to be recorded for posterity and celebrated. That's why Kriyas HaMegillah was ordained and Purim was established as a day of joy and gladness. However, if the circumstances and events can change so quickly, literally overnight, if a prime minister who just yesterday enjoyed the full confidence and trust of the king, Haman, was suddenly convicted and executed? Who is wise and clairvoyant enough to ensure that the same unreasonable, absurd, neurotic change of mood and mind won't repeat itself? Where is the fortune teller who could ensure us that Ahasuerus won't replace Esther with another beautiful woman and take care of her like he did Vashti? The Megillah in general is a book of the vulnerability of man, and specifically the vulnerability of the Jew. The events reported in the Megillah are nonsensical. A king signs away the lives of hundreds of thousands of people without even inquiring about their identity. 3 or 4 days later, he denies the whole story. Musev Ezu! Can you rely on such a person? So Purim isn't just a day of Simcha. Purim has this dual character. Vulnerability. The vulnerability of man is not only a tragic truth or effect, it's more than that. The vulnerability of man is an ethical halachic postulate. The awareness of vulnerability, of being exposed, engenders many ethical virtues, the most important of which is humility. Without the awareness of vulnerability, there's no modesty. Of course, humility is perhaps the highest ethical virtue. The Rambam even suspended its golden rule of Shvil Azov with respect to humility, even though he applied that rule to most other emotions. So you have to be very, very humble. Mod mod avishval ruach. So of course humility is important. But why should man be modest? Why should he be humble? Man is inclined to be arrogant, to be impudent, to be aggressive. He's inclined to reach out for things which are above and beyond his legitimate reach. The arrogance of man is the consequence of his victory. The feelings of self-assurance and self-righteousness which accompany success result in pride and arrogance. However, all feelings of pride and arrogance disappear at the very moment that man becomes aware of his vulnerability and at the suddenness with which his fortunes can change. In other words, the awareness of vulnerability of man is a cathartic awareness, a cleansing awareness, an awareness which purges man, which has a redemptive impact upon man. It's an awareness that ennobles man. The alternative is pride and vanity. Humility is the expression of that awareness of vulnerability. Mordechai walks by the house of women every day to know what's up with Esther, how's she doing. Had Mordechai abandoned caution and adopted the attitude of the arrogant fool? Had he let everyone know he was the father or husband of the queen, he would have commanded their respect. However, had he been proud, vain and boastful, had he bragged about his relationship with the queen, the whole miracle wouldn't have happened. The miracle was made possible by Mordechai's caution and humility. He was silent, he was humble. He waited for something to happen. He knew that the more fantastic the story of success is, the more vulnerable man is. The most vulnerable man in the United States is the president, because the vulnerability of man is proportionate to his greatness. The greater the success, the more vulnerable he becomes. Mordechai knew that Esther climbed to the height of success. That made him all the more cautious. Because of Mordechai's humility, because of his awareness of his vulnerable position, the great miracle was able to occur. The vulnerability of the Jew isn't limited to Jew and Gullus. Of course, Megillah is about Jews and Gullus. However, the destiny charged vulnerability awareness of the Jew is universal. It is an integral part of the universal experience of man in general, the Jewish experience in particular. All encompassing. It applies to everybody, to the individual as well as to the state, to the private person as well as to the community. We're all vulnerable. Israel's vulnerable. America's vulnerable. The whole world is vulnerable again. The last 11 months have shown that to us, and that's supposed to make us humble. So I need a siyag le Torah. Man is vulnerable. He's always exposed. He's always susceptible to influences. Have to make a fence. Hanoshme aloka yitzdak, says Eliyahu in the book of Iyov, shall mortal man be justified before God? And the answer is that man is rescued from conviction precisely because of his vulnerability. The vulnerability of man mitigates the harshness of Hashem's mishpat. Yet, man sins. Why does he sin? Why did man listen to the nachash? Why does man violate the moral law? Because man is silly. He's vulnerable. He's exposed to all kinds of pressures. He's easily persuaded, brainwashed, and hence quickly defeated. At times he is challenged by an agnostic and intellectual society, as today. At other times he's intoxicated with hedonism, pursuit of pleasure. There are political movements, social movements, this movement, that movement. The entire man scoffs at his commitments and promises. He sins because he's a weakling, because fate defeats him. That's the human being. Shnei Sire Yom HaKippurim Shavim Emari B'Koyim V'Domin U'Kochim Ke'echod. The two he-goats of Yom Kippur should be alike in size, alike in value, purchased at the same time. So if they're exactly alike, why does one go Hashem and one go Azazel? The answer is there were lots. One got Hashem, one got Azazel. The mere accidental performance of the Kohen Gadol blindly placing one lot upon the goat and the other on the other goat determines their future. Aaron puts lots on their heads, one to Hashem, one to Azazel. The secret of kapara is hidden in the ceremonial casting of the lots. Because of the fact that man sins under duress and constraint, under the pressures of hostile accidents, man is found not guilty before the bar of justice. What are the semantics of the word Purim? It means lots, goral. It was an unreasonable, absurd accident which brought about the decree of Achashverosh. The question arises, is there something accidental or absurd in nature and history? Do we have the right to speak about Goral or about Mazel? The ancient Greeks said, yeah. They looked upon fate as something absurd, unalterable, ruthless. Indifferent to the aspirations of man. The clash between man and fate, between intelligence and inanimate matter, is in their view the source of human tragedy. Man is always the loser, matter is always the winner. Yadus, though it recognized that catastrophic events often viciously destroy man, his dreams and hopes, couldn't accept the existence of something unreasonable in human life. Yehadus, even though it tells us the story of Eov, of the whirlwind which came from across the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, killing everyone inside, couldn't look upon those whirlwinds as an absurd accident. According to Yehadus, there are no accidents in being. Yadda says that events which we call unreasonable, accident, fate, belong to a higher divine order into which man has not been initiated. While man was granted the opportunity to gain some insight into ordinary scientific logic which deals with regular events, he was denied the privilege of understanding the so-called goral events which impress us as being irregular, incoherent happenings. Man cannot and will not grasp the relationship between the individual and his environment. However, in retrospect, even the most unreasonable event may begin to reveal structural patterns. Retrospection sheds light upon many enigmatic and seemingly unreasonable events. When man views those freakish events in the context of experiences which follow them, the freakish events may appear to be regular ones. In hindsight, many events become understandable. While Hashem passes by, while the event takes place, while the historical drama is being unfolded, we don't understand it. But for Isa Sachoirai, you see me from the back, after it happens, then we begin to understand. Then we begin to see a structure, we begin to see a pattern, we see where it's all going. If this is true, it is legitimate to raise the question about the Purim experience. Why was it necessary? So, it's not always good to ask Hashem why. Who are we to ask why? We're not even going to be told why. But the question is then, what is the message which the Purim experience has formulated for the Jews? What did the Purim experience achieve? Chazal attached great significance to Purim. Hadar kiblu abimech ha-shverish, we're makabel the Torah again. Divrei Yimei HaPurim Eilo Yavar B'Sech HaYehudim Zichron LeYosef Mizarim, it's eternal. So the first conclusion that the Jews discovered in Persia, and we always discover, is Kol Adam Kozev. It's not just a matter of man being a liar or being truthful, something more serious is involved. The Jew discovered that from time to time man goes berserk, turns into a monster and replaces his divine personality with his satanic personality. Man is capable of personifying total evil. This discovery was an agonizing and traumatic experience for the Jews of Persia. Since then, it's been an agonizing and difficult experience for all Jews in all the countries of the world. Why? The Jew believes that man was created in the image of God. Hence, there is a divine spark in every man, even the habitual sinner. The Jew maintained and still maintains that deep down there is something good in every man, even in the sinner. The whole concept of tshuva is based on the principle that there's something intrinsically good in man, eventually we're going to return. The Jew in Persia who encountered Haman, the Jew in Germany and other European countries who encountered Hitler, the American Jews, and even today in Europe, all over the place, in Eretz Israel, we encounter enemies and friends. And discover that they can incarnate total evil. It's a rude awakening. Apparently, Haman proved to them that there's an alternative to being divine, and that alternative consists in being Satan. In other words, the Jew in Persia met Amalek. Megillah is a story of Amalek. Who's Amalek? Amalek is total evil. The man to whom immorality becomes the norm. Not immortality, immorality. Of course, originally Amalek was a wandering Bedouin tribe. But the pasuk is serious when it says, Milchama l'Hashem ba'Amalek midor dor. It's an eternal war against Amalek throughout all the generations. Below the dignity of Hashem to declare an eternal world against a mere Bedouin tribe. Moreover, Amalek will be defeated only at the commencement of Yemos HaMashiach. Nobody will beat them before. The final defeat of Amalek will take place when Mashiach arrives. So who's Amalek? It's not a Bedouin tribe. Not necessarily an entire race or nationality. It's a man who went berserk, a man who incarnates total evil. It's a man Satan. Moshe Soloveitchik said in the name of his father Reb Chaim that any group or people committed to destroying the Jewish people are Amalek. Anyone who says l'chuvan achidei migoyv lo yizach Hashem Yisrael od, destroying the Jewish people, they have a din Amalek. had in 1939 to 1945 Amalek. We've seen other Amaleks. Second discovery which the Jew in Persia made, that Amalek, man Sutton, hates everybody. The dictionary describes Sutton as the enemy of man. He enjoys causing misery and injury to all men. All are alike. Yet man Sutton or Amalek is particularly preoccupied with the Jew. It's irrational. It's absurd, it's mad, but he's preoccupied with the Jew. He hates the Jew more than anyone else. Sometimes Amalek is an agnostic, sometimes he's a reactionary, sometimes he's a liberal, sometimes he's a religious fanatic, but the bottom line is that he's preoccupied with destroying the Jews. And this hatred can run rampant at any time. It says about Haman, I see Mordechai, I just can't take it. Can't take it. Third discovery made by the Jews in Persia. The German Jews made it in Germany, and every Jew has made this discovery in his respective country throughout the millennia. The hostility toward the Jew by man Sutton isn't directed exclusively against the firm Jew. It's all Jews, doesn't matter. The assimilationist Jew, the agnostic Jew, the liberal Jew, the capitalist Jew, the socialist Jew, it doesn't really matter. The important thing is he's a Jew. Everybody was in the decree. Chazal say that Gedol Asaras Tabas Yosef Mimemches Nevi'im, that the removal of the ring from Achashverosh's finger, giving it to Haman to destroy the Jews, accomplished what even the prophets and prophetesses couldn't accomplish. Brought Achdus, that's what Haman does. And that's something that we have to learn, that sometimes this is the only way that the Jews can have Achdus, because otherwise we just can't seem to get along. Mordechai says he can't hide in the palace. He says, Lech Knosses Kol HaYehudim. Haman says, Yeshno Am Echad, Mefuzar Mefurd Bein Amim. They're one nation, but they're Mefuzar. The secret is Achdus, as Fasemis talks about. Okay, Baruch Hashem, we have some beautiful insight into Purim, and obviously there's so much more to say, so hopefully we have more coming, b'siyata d'shmaya, and we should be zocha mirtzah Hashem to see the Geula Shleima and the v'nafochu and the hipuch hagadol of all of history, and the Geula Shleima. Shalom, shalom, sweet Israel.